It's Monday, December 22nd, 2008, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers. Welcome to the podcast. I hope wherever you're at, you're warm. Like many people in this great country, I am snowed in, which is a rare thing to say here in the Pacific Northwest. We usually get an inch of snow, and then over the next couple days, the rain comes and washes it away. But this time, for the third or fourth day now, we are stuck in drifts of snow. I'm talking 2-3 foot drifts in some places. I've been driving around with my four-wheel drive Jeep, got the chains on, pulled a couple people out of the snowbanks too, so it's pretty bad out there. But while we're snowed in here, everything's okay at Normal West Coast Media headquarters. I've gotten a hold of a prototype, and my friend Chet came over. He just harvested a little, and it's always a tradition for us at this time of the year to have Chet's bud smoking in a prototype. Stash box full of keefy bowls. All right, I couldn't help myself. Getting a little goofy here on the eggnog. Coming up here on today's Daily Audio Stash, I'm going to be bringing you all this week, in fact, some of the highlights of 2008 for this next couple of weeks, the best of the Daily Audio Stash, the interviews that, for one reason or another, I found to be the most compelling of the year. So enjoy that. Also gives the folks I interview the next couple of weeks off as well to spend time with their families and friends. Also, for our musical breaks this week, we're going to be featuring all sorts of cannabis-related Christmas tunes. So happy Hanukkah, Merry Christmas, Joyous Kwanzaa, Happy Festivus, whatever you may be celebrating out there. We hope you're warm and you're having a good harvest as well. So sit back and relax and enjoy your normal daily audio stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. High times in ag science, marijuana more potent than ever. From Wired Science at wired.com. Modern agriculture hasn't just made beef cows beefier and corn cornier, it's also made pot more potty. The potency of marijuana, measured by the presence of its psychoactive ingredient, THC, has tripled since 1987, according to the latest figures from the Department of Justice's National Drug Intelligence Center. The new data from the University of Mississippi Potency Monitoring Project, which is not just a group of your college buddies talking about the differences between now and the old days, was released in the 2009 National Drug Threat Assessment. The Department of Justice attributed the steadily rising numbers to, quote, increased demand for higher potency marijuana and improvements in cultivation techniques, end quote. The new pot is certainly a superior product to the shake of the old days, but it's nowhere near as strong as some war on drug advocates have contended. The old White House drug czar, John Walters, has said publicly that marijuana's THC content has, quote, increased as much as 30 times, end quote, which researchers say is not supported by the available evidence. On the other hand, Bruce Merkin of the Marijuana Policy Project, an organization lobbying to change the drugs regulation, said that the average American pot doesn't stack up with the tightly controlled cannabis in Amsterdam. Quote, in the Netherlands, where marijuana for medical use is sold in pharmacies and grown to government standards of purity and potency, the minimal allowable potency is 15% THC, end quote, Merkin wrote in an email to Wired.com. It's not your father's Woodstock weed. It's the deadly pot 2.0 that's 2 times, 7 times, 25 times, 400 times as strong as what the hippies smoked in the 60s. Give me a break. First of all, if the median weed potency in 1987 was 3% THC, then half of all the 80s tokers were smoking industrial hemp, incapable of giving you much more than a headache. Second, the fluctuation in THC potency among different strains in different areas of the country during different months of the year varies more than the difference between these three averages in your chart. Also, what you seize doesn't really reflect what is available to most consumers. Sure, you may have seized a nice cache of 20% THC bud, but how many among the average consumers could actually find that or afford it? Third, the federal government approves of a drug called dronabinol, or Marinol, that is synthesized 100% THC in a sesame oil base. How is it that 100% pure THC in a pill is a prescribable Schedule 3 drug, yet we're supposed to fear a 9.6% THC flower? Fourth, the Delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, has no realistic LD50, a measurement of the lethal dose of that drug that would kill half those who use it. One scientist estimated that if a 150-pound man ate 1,500 pounds of cannabis in 15 minutes, that might be enough THC to be toxic. So even if you do smoke more of a more potent bud, you cannot die. You'll just fall asleep faster. Fifth, cannabis consumers, when presented a higher potency product, inhale less of it to achieve the high. Less smoke is a good thing. The Netherlands requires a minimum THC potency of 15% in their medical marijuana for this very reason. Sixth, cannabis consumers, when given a legal choice, prefer lower potency strains of cannabis. A study comparing consumers in San Francisco and Amsterdam found that the buyers in the legal coffee shops in Holland preferred mild or moderate varieties, while the black market buyers in Frisco always wanted the most potent varieties, because prohibition means they can't really know what they're getting. 7. If you're really concerned about the potency of marijuana on the streets, then why do you let criminals control the market? Nobody's gotten hold of much blindness-inducing triple-digit proof moonshine on the streets lately, have they? Anybody unknowingly smoked any cigarettes laced with PCP? No, because we tightly regulate that market for adults and have strict quality controls over the product. States postponing jury trials due to financial crisis. From the LA Times. Financially strapped New Hampshire has become a poster child for the problem. Among other cost-cutting measures, state courts will halt for a month all civil and criminal jury trials early next year to save $73,000 in jurors per diems. Officials warn they may add another four-week suspension. At least 19 other states, including California, have slashed court budgets and other government services as their economies have tanked, said Daniel Hall, vice president of the National Center for State Courts, a nonprofit in Williamsburg, Virginia. California cut its judicial branch budget by more than $200 million, or about 10%, in the current fiscal year, and further reductions are almost certain as the state grapples with a projected $40 billion deficit. A Republican proposal unveiled last week, for example, would trim a further $205 million from the judiciary. After two rounds of budget cuts in Florida, courts have laid off 280 clerks, lawyers, and other staff members and cut funding for a judges unit that helps resolve civil disputes. State legislators meeting next month are expected to demand more spending cuts. An additional 10% reduction would mean all civil cases in the state of Florida would virtually be suspended, Belvin Perry Jr., chief judge of Florida's 9th Judicial Circuit and chairman of a trial court budget commission, warned a legislative committee in Tallahassee this month. In Vermont, State Supreme Court Chief Justice Paul L. Reiber recently proposed closing as many as 7 county courts, as well as laying off employees, to help ease a budget deficit. The state already shuts district and family courts half a day each week to save money. It's bad enough that our school children have to depend on their teachers to buy paper and pencils and sometimes even toilet paper out of their own pockets because there's just not enough money to throw at the Pentagon. But how is it that our states will shut down the very mechanism that ensures our social order, our courts, because enough money can't be found? And yet, when we propose ending adult prohibition of cannabis, they look at us as if we're sprouting horns and eating babies. New Hampshire is postponing jury trials to save $73,000 a month. I guess that would be roughly $876,000 per year. Currently, New Hampshire spends $20 million per year enforcing adult cannabis prohibition and could make $3.5 to $5.6 million per year taxing cannabis sales to adults. California, Florida, Vermont, and our entire country are desperate for revenue. Taxing and regulating cannabis, similar to hard liquid drugs, that is, alcohol, could generate $10 to $14 billion per year in revenue and savings. A productive hemp industry could add even more revenue with the additional benefit of creating new green jobs. I'm even willing to bet that with legal cannabis, you'll see less social harm from other drugs and alcohol.
Marijuana is an addictive drug which produces in its users insanity, criminality, and death.
Marijuana is the most violence-causing drug in the history of mankind.
If the hideous monster Frankenstein came face to face with the monster of marijuana, he would drop dead from fright.
German study. Marijuana users at risk for personality disorders.
German researchers are warning that using marijuana can have serious psychological side effects. Men who use cannabis risk becoming antisocial, while women often become depressed and insecure.
Who told you I was antisocial? I'll kick his ass! Well, maybe later. My insecure wife is crying over something.
Cannabis users between 17 and 30 years are at greater risk of developing multiple types of personality disorders than non-smokers in the same age group, a German study found. Cannabis also affects women differently than men, the study published in the German psychiatric journal Fortschritte der Neurologie Psychiatrie found. Researchers at the Protestant Bethanian Clinic in Greifswald discovered that young men tended to become antisocial or develop borderline personality disorders, while women who smoked cannabis often became depressed and insecure. Of the 99 cannabis users examined, 90% later developed an antisocial personality disorder.
Damn! That sounds serious. 9 out of 10 people who smoked cannabis became antisocial? Think about that. It means every time you're passing a joint in a circle of 10 people, 9 of those people that you just met and spoke to and laughed with are antisocial. Huh. That must explain why you never see cannabis consumers in large social groups like, you know, 50,000, 100,000, 150,000 of them gathered in a park or something. Huh.
Symptoms include disregard for social norms, reduced or non-existent empathy for other people, and an inability to change behavior despite negative experiences. 1/3 of the participants in the study had 3 or more personality disorders.
Excuse me? Disregard for social norms? If the social norm says you get locked up for smoking cannabis and you're smoking cannabis, aren't you disregarding social norms by definition? Reduced empathy for others? Do you even know any cannabis consumers? I've got a team of over a dozen cannabis consumers who volunteer their time 2 Saturdays a month to help hundreds of complete strangers who are new to the medical marijuana program. Those strangers benefit from the donation of cannabis starts and excess medicine donated by other strangers. I've never met more giving and caring people than cannabis consumers. This whole study sounds like a bunch of bunk. I wonder if they committed the most basic of errors in this research. Wait for it.
However, the study could not determine whether using cannabis was responsible for any initial change in their personalities.
Bingo! In other words, causality cannot be proven. You cannot know whether cannabis made certain subjects depressed or whether depressed people naturally seek out cannabis. You cannot know whether cannabis makes people antisocial or whether cannabis prohibition makes people antisocial. This is one of those surveys where they ask a bunch of questions to people and then break down the results by whether or not you use cannabis. Well, even I'll grant you that people who smoke cannabis are culturally different from people who do not. Being part of a prohibited class of persons will do that to you. It's like the normal slogan. A pot smoker is arrested every 36 seconds, and you wonder why we're paranoid? Now, don't think that your average reader is going to figure out from that last paragraph about cannabis not being responsible for initial changes in personalities. Points like that are always buried in the last couple of paragraphs after most people got the
"Men who use cannabis risk becoming antisocial, while women often become depressed and insecure."
Hey there, Stashers. How would you like to win a 6-night trip to the most cannabis-friendly spot on Earth? That's right, a trip to Amsterdam for 4, sponsored by the Normal Foundation. It's an exciting new fundraiser for our organization, partnering with Win for Charity to help us raise money so we can provide programs and services to normal members like you. Win for Charity is an online hosting solution for charitable organizations that allows us to harness the power of the internet to increase our fundraising ability. How do you win? Simple. Just go to www.winforcharity.com/normal. That's win, the number 4, charity.com/NORML. Click your buy ticket now button, then just select normal as your charity. The vacation package includes 6 nights in an Amsterdam city hotel, including breakfast, entrance to the Rijksmuseum, and a canal bus day pass, round-trip airfare, private transfers from airport to hotel and hotel to airport, a full-day tour to Delft, The Hague, and Madurodam, and a full-day tour to the windmills and Volendam. Get your tickets now at winforcharity.com/normal. Your ticket helps to support our organization, and you could win 6 nights in Amsterdam. The National National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the largest grassroots drug law reform organization in America. So every Monday, we visit with the activists in drug law reform who are fighting for our freedom. Get motivated to get it regulated. Join us in some political activism today. You can start by visiting norml.org. Joining us again here on the Normal Daily Audio Stash is Normal Board of Directors member George Rohrbacher. George, welcome back to the show.
Hey, it's great to be back.
Hey, I wanted to bring you here to celebrate the 75th anniversary of Repeal Day. This is the anniversary of the day that Utah became the final state to ratify the end of alcohol prohibition, the necessary state to get it over the hump there. So, 75 years ago today, alcohol prohibition ended in America, and I just thought I would bring you on to talk a little bit about that and maybe discuss a little bit about how that prohibition came to end and what parallels we might see here with marijuana prohibition.
Well, one of the things that's useful, I think, is to recognize America wasn't the only country to attempt this. America was the only country to attempt it with the full weight of the federal government behind prohibition. But Finland prohibited alcohol in 1919, same year we did, prohibited hard alcohol, wanting people to drink beer instead. And they gave it up in 1931, 2 years before we did. And there's lots of examples across history of societies trying it and giving it up just simply because it doesn't work.
Yeah, we were talking before the interview about how the time of the prohibition of alcohol found, you know, the rise of the criminal gangs, the creation of the mafia, Al Capone, and all that.
Yeah, well, and it's really an interesting dichotomy because the movement that gave us prohibition, the revivalist movement in the America, in the American West, really in the 1820s and 30s. Gave us our first state prohibition. Maine was the first state to go dry and just before the Civil War. And anyway, in 1919, they put it over on us, and this big moral uplift turned out to be the worst crime-creating, society-breaking idea ever put into law.
Yeah.
Unless, of course, you want to use current prohibition as something that even trumps that, but it's hard to imagine just how it changed society. Al Capone, you just talked about, was reported to have made $60 million a year at the head of his beer empire. And you have to put that in perspective that the average farm worker at that time worked it for $1 a day.
Oh, wow.
So $1 a day is what the wage labor guy was getting, and Al Capone was making $60 million selling beer and killing everybody who had any different opinion.
So we've got, 75 years ago, alcohol prohibition ends, but we're looking at now 71 years of marijuana prohibition, if you go back to the Marijuana Tax Act, or if you just want to take it back to Nixon and the real war on drugs that started in the 70s, we're still looking at a couple generations. Why was it, do you think, that it only took, a generation of people in the 20s to figure out that it didn't work, and yet now we've got three or four generations that we've experienced marijuana prohibition that haven't quite gotten the idea yet?
Well, I think it's because the effects were so dramatic and so immediately evident. Where if you look at the arrest record for marijuana arrests, it's a slow ramping up over decades. I guess you can use the analogy of putting a frog in a pot of cool water on the stove and then slowly turning it up. And when does the frog decide it's cooking?
Yeah, right. And this is something we discussed at the Normal conference too, about there being 20 million arrests for marijuana. And I remember, Dr. Nadelman asking, what's it going to take? 30 million? 40 million? I mean, when do we finally realize that this marijuana prohibition isn't working?
Well, I think it's really a case that America has figured that out. It just hasn't been figured out at the state house yet.
Mm.
And to me, the greatest example in this last election was the medical marijuana results in Michigan.
All right.
You know, 63% to 37% is you know, a mega landslide by anybody's calculation. But at the state legislative level, nobody had the guts to put this through. You know, if there was such a huge public feeling on this subject, where are the legislators with the guts to do the work to change this mess?
You know, I think another aspect of marijuana prohibition and drug prohibition in general that makes it so that the people today don't realize it like they did in the 20s with Al Capone is somewhat, you know, that drug prohibition outsources the violence in a way. You know, if people could just spend a week on the northern border of Mexico and realize, you know, the people that are dying down there from the drug war, maybe that would get it into people's heads a little better, do you think?
Oh, well, it's something that you know, this violence and community collapse is offloaded on the poorest sectors of society, those that have the, you know, the least resources to, you know, to do something about it, to save their own kids from it. But it's one of my favorite examples of prohibition is the movie Untouchable, starring Kevin Costner as the ever clean Elliot Ness from Treasury, and Sean Connery is the only honest beat cop in Chicago, and Robert De Niro is the nastiest Al Capone ever put on the screen. And one of the last scenes of the movie, Sean Connery's crawling across his living room floor, riddled with bullets, thumbing his rosary, having just been shot by the employee for the local beer distributor. It just it reminded me so much of the conduct of business in prohibition today, that society confuses the violence with no legitimate control of business with the violence having to do with the actual drug itself.
That's right. People can't separate that. That it's not the marijuana that's causing the problem. It's the marijuana prohibition. And that's why we're here day after day trying to get that truth across to people. You know, another thing, too, about the end of alcohol prohibition 75 years ago that can't be understated was the effect of women in the movement in first enacting alcohol prohibition, but then in repealing alcohol prohibition. And this is something you brought up at the Normal Conference as well with the Pauline Sabin Award. And we're going to play some audio from that here in a second. But tell listeners just a little bit about that history, you know, how women helped out that movement.
Well, and that is one of the surprising sort of hidden parts of how prohibition became unbuckled, is that, I don't know if you're familiar with the ancient Greek tragedy, there's a play called Lysistrata.
Women
get together and say, to hell with war. Well, essentially, the women in America got together and said, to hell with prohibition. This is making drunks drunker, shooting up formerly safe neighborhoods, and this is not a fix. This was a disaster.
Right.
And Normal has had a Pauline Sabin Award recipient for about three decades now, and she was the one who organized the women's resistance, and Allison Holcomb, who's the director of the Marijuana Project at Washington ACLU, was this year's recipient, and she had some really interesting things to say about Pauline and her efforts in the 30s.
Yeah, well, let's play some of that right now, and then I'll splice it in there. So,
wasn't that a good little segue?
Yeah, I had to put my little tick mark in there. Okay. Yeah, that's some good stuff. So George, thanks again for coming back on to the Daily Audio Stash, and we'll keep encouraging people to get involved with this movement. Check out norml.org. There's also a great op-ed in the Wall Street Journal today from Drug Policy Alliance's Ethan Nadelman. So lots of people are talking about this, the end of alcohol prohibition 75 years ago, and we want to end adult marijuana prohibition here today. George, again, thank you so much.
Well, thanks, Russ, and you out there in Stash Land, have a great day.
And a good weekend.
Hello, Chicago!
Barack Obama has been elected the 44th President of the United States. But will he bring us, the cannabis community,
the change we can believe in? It's an issue of doctors prescribing medical marijuana. I think that should be appropriate.
Normal is asking you to take action and help us hold President-elect Obama to his word with our $10,000 pro-cannabis law reform ad contest.
When I was a kid, I inhaled frequently. That was the point.
Just make a 30 or 60 second video or flash animation that answers the question, what should President Obama do about pot? You can submit as many entries as you like, and winning videos will be featured on Normal's website and television campaigns.
What I'm not going to be doing is using Justice Department resources to try to circumvent state laws on this issue.
The grand prize is $3,500, so enter early and enter often.
Well, I would not punish doctors if it's prescribed. That may require some changes in federal law.
Contest deadline is January 15, 2009. Check norml.org for official contest rules.
The war on drugs has been a utter failure, and I think that we need to rethink and decriminalize our marijuana laws.
President Obama, we couldn't agree more.
Here at the Normal Daily Audio Stash, we work hard to change our nation's marijuana laws through education and discussion. But we also take time to relax and unwind with an eclectic mix of pod-safe music from many independent artists. We look for music that speaks to the growing truth about cannabis, or music that speaks to broader themes of freedom, liberty, social justice, equality, and protest. To find out more about the artists and download the music you hear on this podcast, just log on to stash.normal.org. And if you'd like to get your music heard by the online cannabis community, just send us an email at stash@normal.org. Well, for today's musical break, we get a tune forwarded to us from our good friend Cannabis Carrie, who used to be our musical director here on the Stash and still occasionally collects a tune or two for us. She's made quite a friendship with the Tall Brothers up in Victoria, British Columbia. They've been corresponding for some time now, and when we get the chance, Carrie and I are going to head up in the Jeep up to BC and visit them one of these days. They play a great style of jazz that they call reefer jazz, and they've produced a few songs that we've played here on the Daily Audio Stash, like I'm Kinda High, the great tunes from these guys. This one's a nice Christmas tune. I'm not exactly sure what the official title of it is, but you'll figure it out from the chorus. This is the Tall Brothers with some holiday music for you.
Ain't none of your business what we're smoking at Christmas. Ain't none of your business. We're smoking what we want for Christmas. Ain't none of your business what we're smoking at Christmas. Ain't none of your business. We're smoking what we want for Christmas. Put down that gun.
Drop it.
And have some fun. Get out of your funk. And smoke some skunk. Ain't none of your business. What we're smoking at Christmas. Ain't none of your business. We're smoking what we want for Christmas. Christmas, put down that gun.
Drop it.
And have some fun. Get out of your funk. And have some smunk. Ain't none of your business what we're smoking at Christmas. Ain't none of your business. We're smoking what we want. We're smoking what we want. We're smoking what we want for Christmas. Smoking what we want for Christmas.
Are you or is someone you know a marijuana smoker? Have you or is someone in your family been arrested for a marijuana violation? You need to know the truth about pot. NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws, is the most comprehensive source of information regarding marijuana and its effects on health, as well as legal issues. NORML even offers a database of lawyers specializing in cannabis in your area. NORML, the nation's largest and most successful marijuana law reform organization, has spent decades gathering the knowledge and science on everything related to cannabis. NORML is the best resource to find out the truth about marijuana, connect with a lawyer in your area, or help find an end to prohibition. Information is available at normal.org, that's NORML.org, or toll free at 888-67-NORMAL.
We're very, very pleased to be sitting here and talking with Tommy Chong, of course, the famous half of Cheech and Chong. And we've got a breaking story that just took place out of Cincinnati, Ohio. And we brought Tommy here to talk a little bit about it. So, Tommy, welcome to the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Well, the situation here is the bust of Spectrum Labs. Spectrum Labs, of course, is one of these companies that makes drug testing and detoxification products like the Wizinator and other sorts of things like that. But how does this bust fit in with you?
Well, what they did when the feds came in to Spectrum Labs, you know, the SWAT teams, you know, they held the five middle-aged ladies that worked there hostage for hours. In fact, one soiled her pants while they were waiting. They wouldn't let her go to the bathroom.
Oh, jeez.
And then the only thing they took, or at least as far as I know, they took were the DVDs that Spectrum Labs were holding. The AKA Tommy Chong documentary.
Now, this documentary, AKA Tommy Chong, and of course people can get a copy of it at the website, akatommychong.com. This chronicles your case with Operation Pipe Dreams, right?
Yeah. It was the story of the whole Operation Pipe Dreams bust, you know, before I went in jail, during the time in jail, and then after.
So this bust was, you know, taking place from the Western District, Pennsylvania, and a certain prosecutor named Mary Beth Buchanan. And how did they manage to bust you for this situation?
Well, you mean the original bust?
Yeah.
Well, what it was, it was my son's company. My son Paris had a glass company, and they were shipping bongs, you know, to different areas across America. And we're paying our taxes, and, you know, we're totally legitimate, you know. And there's a law that, a little-known law that Joseph Biden, by the way, put in. It was a paraphernalia law that made it illegal to ship any kind of paraphernalia, drug paraphernalia, across the state line. And so they used that law to take down my son's company. And the way they did it, they had to do an undercover head shop in Beaver Falls, Pennsylvania, and then we wouldn't send it to them, you know, because we knew better. But they persisted, and then I think they put an undercover agent into our shop, and then they finally had their shipment. And the feds told me later it was just in time, you know, they're running out of time. They spent $12 million in trapping us to send a bong to Pennsylvania. And so the film, AKA Tommy Chong, is about that bust. And the prosecutor was a lady named Mary Beth Buchanan. And she headed the task force, you know, and she prosecuted me personally when I went to, first of all, I pled guilty, and then they sentenced me on 9/11, 03. You know, a little message there. And then they had the trial or the sentencing in a big courtroom. You know, they were expecting a lot of protesters, but only one guy showed up with a little cardboard free marijuana sign, and that was it. So I went to jail for 9 months, but we filmed it all. And then she had the judge stipulate that I cannot profit from my crime. In other words, I would not be able to make a film or do anything like that about the crime. But you know, my friend Josh Gilbert made it. And so him and Matt Stevens, they were distributing it. And then the cops just recently, 2 days ago, raided the Spectrum Labs and confiscated the film.
Now, Josh Gilbert is the director of the film, and Matt Stevens is the owner of Spectrum Labs out there. And I got some emails from them talking about the bust and how everyone was quite shocked. So is there any indication from the federal authorities here as to the reasoning behind the bust? Was it specifically to get the DVDs, or are they trying to cloak this in the whole, you know, busting them for the Wizenators?
Well, there again, you know, Matt Stevens has been operating openly for many, many years. Since the 90s, you know, and so he's been in daily contact with the local authorities, and so he was totally in compliance with the law. I think it was just a cheap way for the government, namely Mary Beth Buchanan, to try to hurt us financially, you know. Have to have Matt answer, you know, whatever indictment they hand down. But it was just a very thinly disguised attempt to stop us from, or at least to hinder us, selling the DVDs, you know, the way she, you know, the way they confiscated the stock. This is what they're doing, by the way, to the medical marijuana people around the country. The feds are coming in and they're raiding the place like bandits. And they take the people's product and the money, whatever cash they can get, and whatever else they can lay their hands on, and then they leave. And then they don't really prosecute. They just say it's ongoing investigation. And they got that little loophole in their investigation thing, you know, where they can take anything and seal it, and then seal indictment, and then they don't have to tell you anything or give you any reason, and it can go on forever, and then they can quietly drop it if they feel that there's not enough evidence, and you're out all that money. So that's what's going on.
Right. I was speaking to a medical marijuana attorney in Seattle, Washington, just yesterday, Douglas Hyatt. He was the man who defended that patient up in Washington who died waiting for a liver transplant. They wouldn't give him a liver because he was on medical marijuana. And one of his statements that he says among criminal defense attorneys is that the process is the punishment. The getting you in the criminal justice system, even if you're found innocent, just taking your time and taking your money to go through all these court cases, that is the punishment.
Oh, yeah. And that's the total abuse of the system.
Yeah, now this Mary Beth Buchanan, this prosecutor, this U.S. attorney, so she was behind the Operation Pipe Dreams and she was behind the Spectrum Labs bust, right?
Yes.
So does she figure prominently in the movie, a.k.a. Tommy Chong?
Yes, she does. She does. She gets the biggest laugh in the movie.
Oh, wow. So politically motivated, to say the least, you would think here.
Oh, totally. Totally. Well, not so much politically, but personally motivated.
Hmm.
You know, because she doesn't have a career, you know. As soon as Bush is gone, I'm quite sure she'll be facing criminal indictments herself, because she was the one that was in those lawyers being fired for no reason.
Yeah, well, we definitely can hope for that. And
oh,
we'll...
yeah, there's a lot of the chickens are coming home to roost, as they say.
Yeah, and this is just one of many documentaries that are out recently. American Drug War is another one that just came out, and it seems like more and more people are getting the truth about the drug war in general and about marijuana in particular. And the government now looks like that they're just, you know, reduced to some desperate, you know, last measures to try to enforce their own propaganda.
Well, yeah, exactly. It, to me, it's like the thrashing of the dinosaur tails as they sink into the stinkhole, you know. they're going to be extinct, and this is what happens. And see, whenever they do that, like for instance the documentary, you know, the documentary was doing okay, but now it's going to go through the roof, you know, for sales, because people, this is the documentary that the government doesn't want you to see.
Well, I guess it's kind of apropos, you know, when you take a look at the way the government has persecuted this war on drugs, where we've got, you know, triple the heroin and double the cocaine on our streets. You know, they try to prohibit something, it just makes people want more of it.
Yeah, that's the way it works.
Now, just looking to some more happy news here in the land of Tommy Chong, what is going on for you career-wise right now? I know you're out performing your stand-up. Are there any movies coming up in the future or more television appearances?
Well, we're just clipping along, you know, doing the... We got a lot of gigs, you know, doing stand-up. I've been working on a... Oh, I'm the voice and the... the main character of a comic strip called Master Kush, K-U-S-H.
Okay.
And you can go on MasterKush.com and check it out.
And one
and, we're right now we're in the process of working on a feature film deal with the animated character.
Well, that sounds good. And
Master
of course,
Kush and Sister Sativa.
Okay, very good, very good. Yeah. And one of the questions that always has to get asked here, and it's been a long-standing rumor, as to whether or not there'd be any future reunions of the Cheech and Chong comedy team, perhaps in a movie.
Well, we're talking again. That's one good thing. We had a 420 reunion at a movie house when they screened Up in Smoke.
Oh, good.
And Cheech was there, and he was very cordial to me, and you know, he's nice. He's not swearing at me anymore. So
that's a positive step, I suppose.
Yeah, that's a positive step, and you know, it looks good. We're not. I'm not going to make any announcements until you know it's actually happening. But it's in the works for sure.
Well, I would think, you know, with the recent success of so many marijuana themed movies, the Harold and Kumar series, for example. I mean, the public would be just aching for that. I'm sure you guys would make a mint if there was a new Tommy Chong and Cheech movie.
Yeah, I have no doubt whatsoever. You know, that we would be doing very well.
All right. And, you know, looking back to your time in prison, you know, we're talking about this Operation Pipe Dreams, you spent 9 months in a federal correctional facility. What were some of the lessons that you took out of that, you know, being within the system like that?
Well, I it was a life-changing event for me. You know, first of all, I had to get reach into my spiritual bag. You know, that I always had with me, but I never really went there. You know, when you're a successful movie actor, you're kind of busy with the fame and the fortune. But it slowed me down enough to make me realize, you know, what's really important in life. And then I utilized the time to read a lot. And then I also wrote a book, you know, The I Chong. I wrote that in prison. And even the documentary, aka, there's a film clip of me or a news clip of me talking about, you know, jail, and I said, well, you know, who's to say that jail's a bad thing? You know, you go to jail, you write a great book, you know. That's exactly what I did, and I was talking about that back in the 70s. So the prison thing really was, I would say, without a doubt, without hesitation, that it was a single most important thing that's happened to me, to my life.
I imagine that being Tommy Chong in a prison might be a little bit of a different experience than just your average Joe Schmo in prison, though. The prisoners treat you good?
It was thrilling. You know, there were other celebrities in there, but they didn't want to be known. You know, they were in there for, you know, different offenses that they didn't want, you know, a lot of sports figures and so on, you know, that were in there. But they're hiding it, you know. They just went on vacation for a while. But I was a high profile, and so I had a lot of fans. I had the guards, you know. Guards were under orders not to associate with me or to take pictures with me or to treat me any different, but they did. And I really made a lot of friends. I made a lot of lasting, you know, lifetime friendship, and it was a positive, great. I enjoyed it. I'll tell you the truth. I had one bad half hour. When I first went in there, you know, when I went to bed that night, you know, I went from a big, nice home in the Palisades to a little jail, bed, little cot. And that was the worst half hour. It was just a half hour. It lasted a half hour, and then, the spirit came into me, and I've been fine ever since.
Was there anyone there that gave you any sort of trouble? Was there any Sergeant Stadankos in the crowd?
There was one. He was Cambodian guard. In fact, I forget his name now. It's funny, but he was kind of mean. He was a pervert, you know, and he had hit on my wife and all the women. You know, he was kind of a sleazebag. You know, and you get an idea what it would have been like if you're in jail over there, you know.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so he was the only guy. All the rest, no problem.
Wow. So just to wrap things up here just a little bit, again, we're speaking with Tommy Chong, of course, and just looking at the overall philosophy here of our federal government, we've been, you know, 37 years into this war on drugs, and regardless of whether we have Republicans or Democrats in office, we continue to see the escalation. I always point out to people that, you know, Bill Clinton locked up more potheads than any other president. And what do you see as the end game here? Do you feel optimistic about our chances to end this drug war or have some positive reforms, at least within my lifetime?
Well, you got to remember, you're up against greedy capitalists. You know, you're up against imperialists. You know, people, in fact, they make King Midas. They're the King Midas of the world, you know, where everything they touch turns to gold. And the only trouble is when they touch food, it turns to gold. When they touch your kids, everything turns to gold. In other words, they're destroying themselves. And the truth is that we're in a society of yin and yang, you know, conflict. You need, like, every good drama needs conflict. And so, the saving grace of all this is, the Constitution was written by potheads, people that were stoned on pot. They wrote it on pot, and it is upheld. It's survived all everybody. It survived Nixon. It's surviving George Bush. It's going to turn and bite George Bush on the butt. So what we're doing is we're shaking our Constitution. It's a tree, and we're shaking it and shaking it and shaking it, and it just withstands and is stronger than anything that you can throw at it, you know. And so the greed factor will eventually give way to the common sense factor. And so the drug laws, and what the drug laws have done, by the way, you know, the potheads that are in prison, they're the ones that are writing books, they're the ones that are making the prisons work well. They're going on with their life. They're like Nelson Mandela. Nelson Mandela did 27 years in prison, came out to be the premier of the leader of South Africa. That's what's going to happen to America. You know, there's some brilliant potheads that are being locked up that are going to come out, and they have. And by the way, if it wasn't for pot, we wouldn't have computers.
How's that work out?
It's all good. It's all good, and all the bad is temporary, and that's what I learned in prison, and that's what people have to, you know, keep in their heart, is that this Constitution, America, is stronger than the evil bastards that are trying to bring it down.
Wow, that's a beautiful sentiment, and I think we should go out on that one. And Tommy Chong, thanks for joining us on the Daily Audio Stash. What is the one thing that our listeners can do to help you out at this point with this whole Spectrum Labs bust and the AKA Tommy Chong movie?
What they can do is get on aka.tommychong.com and purchase the DVD, aka Tommy Chong, and then have their friends do the same thing. And if everybody buys a copy, then we'll be like Barack Obama. You know, we'll be able to get a little contribution from everybody that listens, and then we'll use that money to make other product and eventually make pot not only legal, but eventually it'll be mandatory.
Well, we can hope so. Tommy Chong, thank you so much for joining us on the Daily Audio Stash.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C. Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.normal.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent.
leave you today with another one of our cannabis quotes, this one from Kinky Friedman, the gubernatorial candidate in Texas, as well as many other interesting hats that he's worn in his lifetime, who said, quote, "I agree with John McCain that we've lost the drug war. Drugs are more available, they're cheaper. It's clear to me if you've lost the war on drugs, then you've got to go some other direction. Marijuana is a very different situation. It's not like crack and other drugs that create violence." End quote. Yeah, Kinky, but the problem is that the marijuana is the linchpin in the drug war. Take away all of us compliant, cooperative, nonviolent marijuana users that get arrested every year, and suddenly you don't have so many people left to arrest, and thus no need for all those prisons and courts and cops and so on. It's a conundrum, but I swear we are going to end adult marijuana prohibition. Yes, we can. I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us for the podcast, and I hope you're having a nice, warm holiday season. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.